Lane bench. There's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can put it in the wind column.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, another week is underway. Happy Monday. It is Monday, December 9th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Hello, Vix.
Hello, Patrick.
Flames Talk is underway this hour on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. You know what it's time for?
Hit me with it.
It's time for a Flames Talk mailbag. It's been too long. It's mailbag time. 960-960 on the text line. Flames are now more than a third of the way through their regular season. They have gotten generally really strong goaltending and team defense. They've put together a very impressive record on home ice. On the other side, they cannot score. They're one of the lowest scoring teams in the NHL, specifically at 5-on-5, and they cannot win on the road for the life of them. So there have been some very good trends. There have been some very concerning trends. As a result, the Flames are 3 games above 500 as we kick off this week. And there's a lot to kick around when it comes to right now and the future, the rest of this season, and even the bigger picture on top of that. So here's the deal on the mailbag. Leave your name if you want. Ask us a question. Get them in. And we're going to go the entire hour doing our Flames Talk mailbag. 960-960 on the text line. If you're listening live, you want to talk about the future of the goaltending position or the goalie usage. You want to talk about trades, American League recalls. That might just be scratching the surface, Vix, when it comes to what we've got to talk about. There's a lot to, I can tell you on the text line, on Flames Talk postgame, even at what I'm seeing already on our text line for the mailbag here, people have all kinds of different things on their mind right now. There's a lot percolating on this team right now.
Should I be scared? Should I be nervous? Should I be excited?
Be
if we
excited.
Had to toss and excited, okay, let's go excited then. I'm okay with
the
that.
The mailbag's always good hour. I always enjoy doing it. Ready to dive in?
I couldn't be more excited to find out what we got
going
here.
And the first one is right up your alley. 960-960. Boys, is it true Zane Parekh received an invite to Team Canada's World Junior Camp due to an injury? Yes, Matt, that is exactly why he was not initially on Team Canada's World Junior Selection Camp invite list. He, among many other high picks from the 2024 draft, left off of that selection camp roster. However, an injury, and that opens up the door for Zane Parekh, who will be going to World Junior Selection Camp now for Team Canada.
Yeah, this opens the door at least a little bit for Zane Parekh to at least give Hockey Canada brass a firsthand look at what he can bring. I'm still reluctant to lock him in as a full-on 100% lock. Of course, he's going to be an injury replacement. And just as I look through sort of the roster for Hockey Canada, this isn't an all-star team. And I'll preface it, whether it's the Four Nations or whether it's the World Juniors, Hockey Canada is building a team. And I could understand, as much as I would like to see Zane Parekh there, I could understand the potential for him not being on that team. And if I were to sort of structurally build out how I'm going to build my roster, Sam Dickinson is a guy that's going to be a lock on that team. And he's just as offensively inclined, maybe not from the high-end perspective, but from the facilitating perspective. And then you've got a 2025 draft eligible in Matthew Schaefer. And the why I bring up those two names is because I can fully sort of envision Hockey Canada on their power play going 4 forwards, 1 defense. And Dickinson's going to be one of those guys on defense. And I'd be fully on board with Matthew Schaefer being the other one. So if you're looking at Zane Parekh not being a full-on power play guy, chances are you might be wanting to look at a two-way defenseman as opposed to Parekh, who is very, very offensively inclined.
By the way, Parekh replacing Pittsburgh Penguins draft pick Harrison Brunicki, the Johannesburg juggernaut. Yeah, he's the South African product. And Brunicki of the Kamloops Blazers, unable to go. He was the player who got injured. Parekh is replacing him. We'll see how that plays itself out. This reads from Jared in Okotoks. Who is a realistic center target for the Flames in the trade market? One of the realistic names has already moved on. I thought Phil Tomasino was an interesting one from the Nashville Predators. He's been moved to Pittsburgh and has started to find some success there. Change of scenery seems like it has worked. It's been a while since we've talked about some of these names, but some of the names that I have thrown out in the past, I know Krebs in Buffalo has been one of them. McMichael in Washington has been one of them. There's another one. Now I can't seem to remember who it was. I'm going to go back.
You're not thinking Dylan Cousins in
Pittsburgh. I am not as much.
As well.
Cousins was not one of them. Tomasino was. Now I just got to go back and look at a last text. Because I do remember having a conversation with somebody in the past.
I can't imagine McMichael from Washington
I don't
would
think
be
so
available
either,
whatsoever.
But
I mean, he's a point per game player on one of the best teams.
Shane
in the
Pinto,
NHL.
That's the other one that I was looking at. Pinto. The reason why McMichael was on my radar earlier was because Dubois had come in and they'd shifted McMichael to the wing, and you're like, how's that going to work? Well, it turns out it's worked out really well, yeah. and McMichael's exploding. So he is less of a realistic target now. Tomasino, I thought, was a really nice target. But Pinto is an interesting one to me just because things haven't necessarily gone swimmingly in Ottawa this season. And he's a guy that fits the age range. He's a guy that fits the profile in terms of being a right shot center iceman. I think that there's some nice potential there. Sens team that is below 500 and looking to shake things up. Now, I don't want Michael Andlauer accusing me of tampering. So I'm not tampering owner of the Senators. That's a current events joke. I think Pinto would be a really interesting target. And he would be more of the, you're going to have to pay to bring that player in. Krebs may be a little bit more of a buy low candidate with where he has been slotted in Buffalo's lineup.
Well, in all fairness, and not to disparage, pardon me, Shane Pinto, but he's only got 3 points in 19 games this season. So there might be one of those, as Pat Steinberg calls them, market inefficiencies.
That's always what I'm looking at right now with trades.
In looking at Shane Pinto, and he checks a lot of boxes. He's young. He's only 24 years old. He's got great size at 6'3", 204 pounds. And for whatever reason, he has not been a fit with the Senators this season. So that might be one of the guys that you want to bring into your organization, have a little peek under the hood, get him under your sort of tutelage, and see if there's something that can be there for him. Because as I mentioned, 3 points in 19 games this year, not great, but at 27 and 41 a year ago.
Exactly. So I think there are some interesting targets out there, and you're right. You know, maybe a guy like Pinto is a guy that you're not going to give up as much for. 24 years old, just turned 24, right shot. He would be the guy that would be probably the top of my target list if I were having the conversation, which obviously I'm not. This from Matt, who says, this is the real Flames. Yeah, they are who we thought they were. I think we can now start to be confident that there are some things that are going to be part of this team's identity, good and bad. On the good news first side of things, I do think they're a team that has strong team defense. I think whether they're going to be getting top 10 tandem goaltending all year or not, I do think that we can be pretty confident that goaltending is going to be better than maybe the expectations were, and they probably are going to get at the very least competent NHL goaltending for the rest of the year. I'm confident in saying that. There's a lot of belief. There's a lot of hard work. Like, those are the good things that I think that are going to be constants. And on the other side, I think this team is going to have trouble scoring all year. I don't think, like, is it going to be as bad as it's been? Maybe not. But I don't think it's going to improve so drastically that we're going to be talking about a high-powered Flames offensive group. This is going to be a team in a lot of one-goal games. This is going to be a team in a lot of low-scoring games. And there's going to be a lot of third periods where they're playing in one-goal or tie games. That's kind of who they are, too.
Yeah, my opinion from September to Monday, December 9th, has shifted somewhat in the sense that I thought goaltending and defending would be major issues for the Calgary Flames, but perhaps they would be able to rely on their depth up front in order to carry the load a little bit in terms of their scoring. And it's actually been exactly the opposite, where I did not predict the Calgary Flames would get as strong of goaltending as they have through 28 games this season. I didn't expect necessarily Vladar and Wolf to perform at the level that they have. And to be perfectly honest, I didn't expect them to struggle as much as they have to generate offense. Now, I'm not sitting here suggesting that the expectation should have been that the Flames were going to be a top 10 scoring team, but you had a couple guys hit 30, you had another hit 29, and just your depth through the top nine in your lineup should be producing on occasion more than three goals a game, which we haven't seen in 25 straight.
That is correct.
That is scary.
An accurate stat. this reads from Mean Gene: for a team struggling to score, I'm struggling to understand why Tyson Barrie doesn't get more games. Thoughts? I think there's a few things on the Barrie front. First of all, I think Tyson came into this season eyes wide open. He knew he was going to be in the, you know, 6, 7, 8 conversation with some other guys. Few things have happened. Number one, Braden Pahal hasn't really let go of that grip he's had on the third pairing right side defense, and Tyson Barrie's a right side defenseman. So when they bring him in, he's playing his offside, which is not ideal when the two other guys that we're talking about in this rotation of Hanley and Bean are both left shot guys. So I think that is part of it. The power play has been going, and there's not really a clear spot for Barrie. I know the power play struggled against Dallas, but prior to that, they had 10 goals in 9 games. There's not really a natural spot for Barrie on the power play right now. And if there's not a need for Barrie on the power play, the need for him at 5-on-5, especially playing on his offside, is a whole lot less. I think that is the main reason why Barrie has gone as long as he has, not getting into a game right now. But I also don't think that Barrie is super surprised at the role he's playing. He knew what he was signing up for. He came to camp on a PTO, and he signed here knowing that he was going to be in the depth conversation. So I don't think that this is something that is, like, does he want to be playing? Of course. But is he upset, or is he a guy that is going to all of a sudden be a detrimental force inside that room? By no means. I don't think that guy's got it in him, to be perfectly honest with you. And he also knew what he was signing up for.
Yeah, and I think there's an understanding of it's somewhat a chicken or the egg scenario here when we're talking about Tyson Barrie, because yes, the Calgary Flames need to find a way to score more into goals. There's no doubt about it. But is Barrie going to, you know, on a regular basis, be able to impact the game enough offensively to cover some of the defensive lapses that are just bound to happen in terms of his ability to defend? So if you're Ryan Huska, for example, and you know you're going to be likely in a one goal game, I can understand leaning Pahal over Barrie for that right side spot in your third pair, because the risk of giving something up is so much lower with Pahal on the ice than it is Barrie. But I do understand the flip side as well, where, yeah, well, you haven't scored more than 3 goals in 25 straight.
How much is he going to move the needle, though, offensively?
That's in 10 minutes of ice time, 5-on-5.
Yeah.
And again, if your power play is clicking like it has over the last 10 games or so.
All of a sudden, if there's an injury, knock on wood, or if there is a need to infuse something different into your power play, if you're like, geez, you know what, we're not liking 2-4 forward, 1 defense units, let's see if Barrie can jumpstart it, then sure. But there's less of a natural need, there's less of a natural role for him right now. I think that's fair to say.
The other element for me is, other than Ryan Lomberg, who do you have as a deterrent in your lineup?
Yeah.
Physically.
Yeah.
To me, that ends with Braden Pahal.
This says today on Daily Faceoff Live, this is from Derek in Edmonton, by the way, they talked about the continued struggles in Buffalo, was brought up that Dylan Cousins has been moved to the wing currently. Also, if Buffalo were to look at making some moves, it might be harder to move him for a worthwhile return with his contract than maybe a J.J. Paterka. Would now be the time for Conroy to start making calls to see what it would cost for Cousins or another one of the younger players in the Buffalo lineup? Also, is the Colorado goalie swap with San Jose something you could have seen the Flames being in for a similar package for Vladar? We'll answer both. Let's start on the Cousins-Buffalo front. Sure. I mean, I think that's a team that could absolutely be an interesting trade partner for the Flames. I don't know if Cousins would be that guy, but could be. I look at Peyton Krebs as a guy that is a little bit more of that quote-unquote market inefficiency with where he's playing in the lineup. Cousins can play center. Obviously, Krebs can play center as well. I don't know how. I mean, you talk to most people that talk about the Sabres or cover the Sabres. Paterka is one of those guys that is kind of like listed in it as the core. You know, they talk about Tage Thompson and Rasmus Dahlin and JJ Paterka and so on and so forth. I Owen Power, like Paterka is always in that mix, whereas Cousins is kind of finding himself there sometimes, they're not. And Peyton Krebs was playing fourth line center. He's been moved up a little bit, but I still wonder if there there'd be a more likely fit with Krebs in a trade than maybe with Cousins. But that would be how I'd answer that part of the question.
I think from a pure cost perspective, Krebs would be cheaper than Cousins. And I say that with a full understanding that Cousins only has 6 goals and 12 points in 27 games this season, but he still is playing almost 18 minutes a night. He still is a player that you're going to slot in your top 6. Would I want Cousins? Absolutely. Would I be willing to gamble on him at a high cost? I'm not so certain that that would be the swing that I would take, especially at the salary. But
well, that's the other part, is that Cousins is signed on a long-term
deal. At a good chunk of money as well. So do I take that chance and hope that the change of scenery gets there? Potentially. It depends on the asking price. But from a pure what's it going to cost perspective, I feel like I would want to gamble on the lower cost that Krebs would demand. But I would be looking. And this is not to say that Craig Conroy hasn't. I would be almost certain that he's well aware of what it would cost to land a Cousins or a Krebs at this point.
The second part of Derek's question, the Colorado goalie swap with San Jose, would the Flames have been able to bring in a similar package for Vladar? The move today saw Mackenzie Blackwood go to Colorado from San Jose. It was a pretty significant move, all things considered. Colorado has done complete surgery to their goaltending. The deal today was Mackenzie Blackwood and Giovanni Smith, along with a 5th-round pick to Colorado for goaltender Georgiev, Nikolai Kovalenko, a 5th-round pick, and a 2nd-round pick. Mackenzie Blackwood is a guy who's got a pretty decent track record of playing in this league. He's put up some nice numbers at times throughout. Like, Blackwood is, whether it goes back to his time in New Jersey or some of his time in San Jose, where he's put up some really nice numbers and performances on a poor team. You know, Blackwood's been identified for quite some time as a guy that, like, hey, there's a potential number one with a track record that can maybe help a team that's looking. And I think more so than Vladar has with Calgary. So I don't know if you were getting the same type of return for a Vladar that you would with the Blackwood. Vladar is about 5 years younger. No, sorry, 2 years younger. I keep thinking Vladar is 23. He's actually 26. So he's 2 years younger. So I guess my answer would be, I don't think you were getting Kovalenko a 2nd, Georgiev, and a 5th for Vladar. I think Blackwood was a more valuable trade target. There's more questions when it comes to Vladar. He's coming off the hip surgery. We don't know if he can play the workload, all those types of things.
And with that, though, if I'm the Flames, I don't know how interested I would be in the deal as it was structured with San Jose in bringing Georgiev back in this deal. It's something that the Colorado Avalanche would almost certainly need in terms of shedding that salary to try a different goaltender. I just don't know if what the San Jose Sharks got would make me want to do it from a Flames perspective, bringing back Georgiev. That said, getting a 2nd-round pick for Vladar would be something I'd be interested in. I just don't know if I love trying to get Georgiev back to a spot where maybe you could flip him before the deadline.
Well,
again,
it sounds like
AHL.
It sounds like Colorado had targeted Blackwood quite some time ago, so they had kind of honed in on him for at least the last week and a bit, and so I think Blackwood was the guy they wanted to bring in. And now it makes the Wedgwood deal look a whole lot more. You're like, okay, I see a little bit more. Because at first I was like, Wedgwood's the guy they went to.
Well, yeah, I don't think Wedgwood was going to be the de facto number one.
No, I don't think so.
He's trying to be more of a stabilizer.
But everybody was selling it as, well, they've stabilized their goaltending now with Wedgwood. I was like, what are you talking about? Wedgwood just blanked whoever they blanked yesterday on Sunday. He just posted a shutout. But I was like, Wedgwood's the guy they're going to, now that they've done Wedgwood and Blackwood and completely done a facelift on their goaltending, it makes a little bit more sense now. So I don't know if they were, if the Flames were going to get the same type of package as San Jose got for Blackwood. And I don't know if the Avalanche were going to meet Calgary's asking price for Vladar, because it sounded like Blackwood was the guy they wanted.
That said, I don't know if Colorado, I don't want to say is necessarily done, because this isn't rumor, this is pure speculation, but I wonder if Colorado making a move like this, this early in the season, and I shouldn't say this early, we're a third of the way through, but this gives the Avalanche plenty of time to see whether or not they have their solution and whether or not they have to make another deal before the trade deadline.
It does,
well.
And it also, you know, Kevin Woodley always talks, when trading goaltenders, talks about how important it is to do it. If you're going to do it in season, do it earlier, because it takes time for a goalie to learn a new team, new defense, how they defend odd mans, how they defend two-on-ones, how they defend in zone, all that type of stuff that maybe we don't think about as much when it comes to the goaltending position. Avalanche, team save percentage, 866. The next worst goaltending team's at an 875, and they're at 866.
Who's 31st there? Who's just ahead of them? I shouldn't say just ahead, but
Columbus.
Ahead of them.
Oof. The Columbus Blue Jackets.
Not ideal.
What else we got here at 960, 960? This from Dan. My question is kind of simple. Do they have a translator to communicate with Kuzmenko? Seems like messages aren't getting through, and we can see his English isn't very good. Is it that simple? I've been told that Kuzmenko, from a hockey perspective, understands that, like, there's no...
Lost in translation?
Not, like, if we were going to be having a conversation about, like, gardening or, I don't know, like, architecture, there might be some lost in translation. But when it comes to the language of hockey, there's nothing lost in translation, is how I understand it. This says, I want to get both of your thoughts on whether to trade or extend Rasmus Anderson. From my perspective, depends if he's more valuable on the Flames or in a trade. If he can get you a blue chip prospect in a trade, I think it's worth moving him. The Flames desperately need elite talent in the organization, and Anderson will be in his 30s when the team is good. My question is, do you think Anderson can get you a blue chip prospect? And do you worry about a decline in his 30s, especially knowing the way he plays? I think it would be much smarter saving that cap space when they need to pay some prospects. Your thoughts. That's from Nathan in McKenzie Lake. So I did a mailbag over at sportsnet.ca late last week, and the lead question was about Anderson as well. I'm very, very firm in where I believe. Like, my opinion is pretty concrete on what I think should happen with Anderson. I am fully on the re-sign him train. I am fully on the extend Rasmus Anderson train if you can. I think that for a small Canadian market, when you draft and develop a guy who turns into one of the better defensemen or better players at his position in the NHL, a player that is worthy of being a lock on his team's best-on-best roster like Anderson was for Sweden, for a small market Canadian team that has also had trouble retaining players, if you have an opportunity to retain a guy that you have drafted, developed, and watched turn into the high-end player he is now, I'm always of the opinion, or most of the time of the opinion, extending that player is the way to go, and I am firmly of that opinion when it comes to Rasmus Anderson. Could he get you a blue-chip prospect? Maybe. Could he get you your number one center? I would still say more likely no than yes. He could get you a draft pick that you could use, but I personally think there's more value keeping Rasmus than trading him. However, in saying all that, if contract talks aren't being productive when you can start having them on July 1st, and if there is an indication or a feeling that maybe he'd be more interested in trying the free agent market, then no question in my eyes, I am trading Rasmus Anderson, but only under those circumstances. All things being equal, if there is a desire from him and his camp to remain in Calgary, I'm signing him 10 times out of 10. And paying the man.
Well, this is going to be boring because I'm just going to echo everything you said. I do believe that if you were to opt to trade Rasmus Anderson, now you are getting a first round pick in a blue chip prospect. The problem is that first is going to be from a team that is a contender. So you're looking at somewhere in the 20s, depending on how the playoffs shake out. But I, like you, Pat, would make it a priority to sign Anderson. And the only way I would entertain trading him is if those extension talks aren't productive.
Yeah. It's a Flamestock mailbag. We are well underway in it. Keep them coming at 960-960. Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you. Our Flamestock mailbag and this hour of Flamestock coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Flames Talk mailbag continues on this Monday. Steinberg and Vickers along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio. We got lots to get to, so let's just dive right in.
Are we in the power session now?
We are now, yep.
Love it.
As it always goes. This reads, boys, with the system that Huska has the team adopting, unless the goalie's standing on his head every single game, it's rather stifling in terms of offensive creativity. I realize the players need to have defense-first mindset since they don't have any high-end skills, but how on earth will scoring improve under such a system? Fair question. And for me, that's why I keep saying, I don't know how much more offense this group has to give, because I don't think it is a coincidence that across the board, everybody's down. Like, it's not just Huberto, Kadri, Sharon Govich, Coleman.
Zeri,
Kuzmenko. The only guy who's not is Coronado. And he's really only not because this is his first full year in the NHL and he's producing a little bit. I do think two things, and they can be true at the same time. Number one, I do think the brand of hockey the Flames are playing is the brand of hockey that is going to allow them the most success in terms of wins and losses this year. And I think it is the biggest reason why they're three games above 500 as we're talking right now. At the same time, and also true simultaneously, the brand of hockey this team is playing does, and I believe will continue, to make it difficult to be a high-powered offensive group. I do think it does stifle some offense. And that is a trade-off that I think the team needs to be okay with continuing forward. That's why I say it feels like it's going to be difficult for this team to meaningfully improve their offense in like a massively noticeable way. Can they be better? Yes. Are they going to go from 30th or 29th overall in 5-on-5 scoring to 15th? Probably not.
No, I don't think that that's fair at all, and I don't think that should be the expectation, and I don't know if the expectation coming into the season was with the top three lines that they have, they'd be able to be a top 10 or a top 15 offense, but I do believe that they have more to give offensively, whether it's being limited by the system. I agree with you in the sense that the Calgary Flames are playing a certain way, which will be their path to success for them, whatever you want to define success as. But the fact that I don't think there's a significant like 180 degree change from how they were playing last season in terms of their systems. There have been changes defensively, and they have to focus on that defensive aspect in order to limit less. You're trying to allow your opponent to score fewer goals than what you're generating at the end of the day. It's not trying to outscore them. It's trying to allow fewer goals than the opposition. At the same time, they're still down half a goal per game over what they were able to generate last season. And some of that is still having Elias Lindholm and Noah Hanifin, so on and so forth, on your roster. But I do believe there still is room for growth. And part of that is just looking at their shooting percentage from last year compared to this year, it's down as well.
This from Curtis in Monterey, who says, what happened to all the fans wanting the Flames basically to tank this season so they can get a lottery pick? Now people are panicking because the Flames can't win on the road. They haven't been scoring, and basically they've been doing what everybody was hoping for them to do on the road. However, at home, they're playing very strong. My opinion, let's start Vladar a bit more than Wolf right now, just because I think Wolf's struggling a little bit because he keeps playing on the road. Yes, he's been getting home games at times, but he's been getting the majority of the road games, has he not? I see great upside in this team, but I do think they should try to make some moves sooner than later with players that can get them some assets for the future. That comes from Curtis in Monterey. I actually think it's been more Wolf home games than road games. I do agree, though, that Wolf has his level has dipped a little bit, I thought he was pretty good for the most part until the third period, where the entire team unraveled in front of him as well against Dallas. But I do think that the overall goaltending level has come from being like one of the two or three best goaltending teams in the NHL to maybe a little closer to realistically where they should be. And I think for sure Vladar against Nashville makes sense. I also think for sure maybe a little bit more Vladar than Wolf for the time being might make some sense, just to maybe get Wolf a little bit of a reset. Remember, he's never played an NHL schedule for this long before in his career, especially with the type of ice time he's getting. I think there's always room to manage, and it's a everything is not linear when it comes to how you're managing the goaltenders. It's not one rule and you stick with that. They're, oh, win and you're in, and you do that for the rest of the year. No, that's not how it works. This is a very, very carefully curated thing when it comes to their goaltending choices right now.
Wolf's, of his 14 starts, Wolf has played 8 at home, 6 on the road, and there's just such a dramatic swing. He's got a .942 save percentage at home and an .862 save percentage on the road. So there is some dramatic swings there. And to your point, start whoever you feel like is going to give you the chance to win at any given time. It doesn't have to be an alternate. It doesn't have to be win if you're in. But just the fact that there's such a dramatic swing. And even a little bit to Dan Vladar, too. Let's not just single out Wolf here, where Vladar has a .917 at home and an .888 on the road, too. So it's a collective road issue for the Flames.
Their goaltending has been significantly different one place to the next. No doubt about it. This from Ian in Cranbrook. Guys, until they get someone who can win draws, this team is going to be chasing it. If Conroy doesn't address this in the short term, guys will get frustrated and stop working, feeling management isn't addressing their concerns in order to compete day to day and affect team morale and buy-in and cause in-room division. Your thoughts? I don't agree. I don't think that them not going and getting somebody to address the face-off dot is going to then fester into an in-room division. I think that's a lot of jumps being made there. And I also, going back to the first hour when we read a text, I don't think making knee-jerk moves or reactionary moves to this roster, to affect only this roster, makes a lick of sense where the Flames are going right now. If they want to make a move that impacts the bigger picture and fits with their 3 to 5 year plan, that the byproduct is also helps the team right now, helps them in the faceoff dot or depth wise or whatever, sure. But making a trade just for this season, I'm quite firmly against at this point, Vix.
I don't spend any assets that affect the future in terms of dealing picks or prospects in order to address an issue now. And I'm of the belief, in just talking to some players, that it's not so much their sitting there going, oh man, we need help from the outside. We're not able to do it on our own. Go out and make a trade or bring somebody in that's going to help us, because we can't fix this on our own. That's not the vibe I get from the group in the room.
Tim and Moose Jaw, if you look into the Flames crystal ball, which member or members of the current roster will not be here after the trade deadline?
Well, I would go Kuzmenko, but that seems like a cop-out answer.
No, I think there's a few. I will say Kuzmenko is one of them. And even if you're not getting a second or a third round pick, I think there is, even in the short term, if this continues to be a problem, I think for the good of both sides, a trade makes sense. Even if it's a flyer on another team saying, yeah, we'll give you a sixth and we'll give Kuzmenko a try for the rest of the year. It gives Kuzmenko the opportunity to go fight for a contract in the NHL next year with a change of scenery, which I think could be helpful. And it allows the Flames to move on from I want to be very careful now I say this, because I defend Kuzmenko, because I don't think this guy is not trying. I don't think this guy is being lazy. I don't think this guy is checked out. I think any of those narratives are false. I think this guy cares. I think this guy is trying. I think that we're talking about a guy who's a little up in his head, and that is starting to take over a little bit. But I don't think that Kuzmenko is going to become a locker room problem. I don't think that's who he is, based on people I've spoken to, my observations of him. Like, I don't think that that's a worry. However, when you've got a guy at $5.5 million who is sitting as a healthy scratch on a regular basis, that becomes an inherent distraction regardless of how good an attitude that player has. And I think Kuzmenko's attitude will remain very, very good regardless of how this goes, but that becomes a distraction just period. So if you can, from a team perspective, alleviate yourself from a potential distraction and open up another roster spot for somebody young in the American League, give Kuzmenko an opportunity elsewhere with a change of scenery to fight for an NHL contract, I think it might be the best of both worlds. So Kuzmenko, I will say. Vladar, I will say. And I'll throw one more out there just for the hell of it, just thinking about how things... I will say I'm between two guys. I'm going to go Rooney. And you might get a team to the at the deadline. Guy on an expiring contract who can play PK in fourth-line center minutes. Don't think you're going to get a haul or anything like that, but I'll say three. Rooney, Vladar, Kuzmenko. There's three that won't be here after the deadline if I were to look into the crystal ball.
I'm going to add two more, and I'm not suggesting that this is going to be an overwhelming return or anything, but I could see teams looking at Barry and Hanley as depth players to add to your blue line, because any team that wants to go on a run inevitably either has to go 7, 8, 9 defensemen deep. So having a guy like Barry that might be able to get some power play time, or that you just have to insulate your defense. And then sort of the same reason for Hanley. Again, I'm not suggesting that they're going to generate massive returns, and one of them might even be by way of waivers. But that's sort of my sense is, if you're asking me this question, who might not be here post-trade deadline, those are two other candidates that I would toss out there.
This reads, Pat, I don't agree with people wanting a complete teardown, but it's very evident right now the Flames lack truly elite players with Anderson Weegar on the edge and maybe Wolf Parekh in the future. If they are adamant about doing a hybrid rebuild, have you heard a plan from Conroy or above how they plan on getting elite players? Drafting 10 to 15th overall makes that hard, and attracting free agents isn't realistic. I fully agree on the second part. I'm trying to get your elite guy via free agency anywhere in the NHL, not really a way to go about it. A Tavares comes along very, very rarely. But on top of that, in a small Canadian market, almost entirely unrealistic. I think it is the plan is to trust your scouting, trust your development, and trust that you find your guy via the draft like other teams have. It's not as it's not as frequent that we see that happen. But teams do find guys that, I think of who's the number one center in Dallas? Roope Hintz. That's not a high first round pick, right? And that's just, Dallas is everybody's example. Who is Carolina's number one center? Sebastian Aho, second round pick. So, like, these guys can be found. And so, that is what I think the plan is right now, to continue to stockpile picks and some prospects. And again, Aho, Hintz, few other names. I think that there could be some good examples out there, but you're kind of paddling upstream, right? Like, that's not the most likely way of doing it. The odds are higher you pick, the better. Like, I'm not rocket sciencing you here, but I do think that is their plan, is continue to stockpile picks, and even if they don't get the 3-4 overall, try and see if they can find a guy that way, or some of those players that way. And who knows? I mean, Zane Parekh at 9 overall could be that guy. Dustin Wolf in the 7th round could be that guy. It's the center iceman that I think they really have to look at and find a way. I mean, even Mikko Rantanen is a 10th overall pick. You can find, what is it? Pasternak was a late first round pick. You can find these guys, but it's less likely than if you get that high pick.
Yeah, the more often than not, you're not going to find that guy with the pick, but the more picks you have, the greater the opportunity you do of having some of those guys, finding some of those guys, and having those guys be key members of your team for a long period of time. Very rarely will you run into a scenario where an unrestricted free agent hits at 25 and tests the open market. They've done their 7 years of service, and they have managed to work their contract situation in a way where they're able to become a free agent early. I shouldn't even say early, but on time as per the collective bargaining agreement. and then you'd be banking on the Calgary Flames being the front runner. You've got to basically do it through the draft and development.
Scotty in Lethbridge. Good evening, Pat and company. I'll keep this short, sweet, and to the point. Is Pelche an NHLer? I just don't see it. He doesn't push the needle in any role given to him. Invisible at this level for some reason. Last chance motel for this kid, I think. Maybe Conroy can package him up in a nice cadre deal at the deadline. Fair question. I still don't know. I haven't found him to be invisible in his three games, though, on this recall. I think in a very limited role, I think he's actually moved the needle pretty decently based on how much he's playing. I still don't know what he is. I still don't know if he's a full-time NHLer. The Flames still don't know that, and that's a big reason. The biggest reason he was one of the guys recalled, I can tell you this factually, was because there was a feeling they needed to give him some NHL time so that they know, so that they can make a decision with him this summer as to whether he's in the fold going forward or not. And also, I think it is fair to say that by getting him some NHL time, and if it works decently, even if he becomes somewhat redundant organizationally with other guys that can fill that role, maybe it can boost the trade value, of which there was none prior to the season. He went through waivers unclaimed. There was no trade value prior to the season. You know, there are a lot of different things that bringing him in and having him play decently, which I think he has for nine periods here, can do for the team. So I don't know if he's a full-time NHLer yet. I'm hopeful. I still think that the potential exists, but I do think this is last chance motel. I really do think this could be his last opportunity to prove it.
I think it's been a positive three games for Pelletier, and limited sample size and limited role. And I don't think the expectation is, oh, can Pelletier still be a top six forward in the NHL? I think you need to adjust the expectation a little bit. Sample size is only three games. This isn't an absolute, but in those three games, he's shown to me that he can be a bottom six or a fourth line forward, but he's got to do it longer than three games to determine whether or not he can be an NHLer full-time.
Let's hit some of these rapid fire before we wrap. James in Brayside says, gents, what do you think the offensive ceilings are for Zeri and Coronado? I think kind of in the 60 to 70 point range, I think you could see Zeri once he kind of really gets confident and maybe the finishing starts to take a step forward. I think Coronado can be a 20 to 30 goal guy in this league as he continues to progress. Those, I think 30 goals is a nice ceiling and not unattainable for Coronado. I think 65 points is a nice attainable kind of level for Zeri to hit. I don't want to limit these guys. They're still young, but that just would be my quick thought when asked the question.
Yeah, I think for Zeri, 60 to 65 points, and Coronado wouldn't surprise me to see him score 30 one year, but I would put the expectation somewhere around the 25 goal range.
I just want to see how many we can get to before wrapping up. This from Dan in Chestermere. Can I ask why the love affair with Braden Pahal? I seem to witness him messing up more often than not. The biggest reason why Pahal is a pretty constant piece on this blue line is because he brings something that nobody else really does. Decent penalty killer, is willing to play a full-on stay-at-home role and bring some physicality that they, outside of Uyghur and Anderson, who like to bring it, and Ball, who is not a bruiser, their most physical defenseman is Pahal. They don't really have anything else like that in the lineup right now. I think that is the main reason why.
I think it simply boils down to he's probably been their fifth best defenseman this year. And I don't know if that was necessarily the expectation coming into the season or, you know, even late last year when you're evaluating what the lineup's going to be over the summer, where does Pahal fit? So I think he's been a bit of a feel-good story in that sense where he solidified himself as an everyday NHLer for the Flames.
Great stuff. If we didn't get to your text, I apologize. Lots of them, as always, at 960-960. Thanks for every text, whether we read it or not. We always love doing the mailbag. Thought that this would be a good time to do it. We had the full hour on this Monday to do it. It was wide open to us. Things are not going overly swimmingly for the group right now. And, hey, we're moving in on the Christmas break, so this kind of might have been the last opportunity in 2024 to hit a Flames mailbag. So thought we'd do the Flames Talk mailbag. I enjoyed it. Great questions, as always, at 960-960. As we start to wrap things up this hour, Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Our producers this hour have been Shan Vergy and Cam Hughes. My name is Pat Steinberg, and this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.